Oh, hi. I didn't see you there. Welcome, dear listener, to another edition of the Infinite Escape Room Pubiverse. This week, join Dom, Ben, and I as we chat about Dom's puzzle, Are You Still Watching?, chat briefly about how Netflix documentaries are a crock of crap, yearn for the days of good VFX in film, try desperately to name a Jason Statham film that Ben has actually seen, and we applaud the benefits of stainless steel and swimming.
Good evening. Don't you all look lovely? Welcome to the Infinite Escape Room's Pubiverse. If you haven't listened to last week's episode, I would recommend you do so now, primarily because I wrote it. You join us now in the Stream of Gold pub, where instead of buying a drink, you pay a monthly price to have a drink whenever you want, but sometimes you'll turn up and find they've just got nothing good on tap.
No.
It's my round. Who are you people, and what are you having?
Hello, my name's Jamie, and as befitting the theme of the pub, I'm drinking a Hobgoblin Gold, the beer of choice for many tier solvers. It's been a while since I've had a beer on the podcast. It's actually quite nice.
Yeah, have you finally run out of mead?
Oh, no. I've still got four bottles left. But this was a gift from a friend when I went to visit them a few weeks back. So I thought, you know what? Let's change things up a bit. And truth be told, I'm on my second bottle, and there's one in the wings. So, yeah.
I was going to ask if it was an early morning and tomorrow.
Well, the night is young. We'll see. I just don't go to bed and just keep going. It's a school night, but eh.
And I'm Ben Levy Griffiths, and I am completing this week the Holy Trinity, and I am drinking a baby
shampoo. Oh, yeah.
Fantastic.
I love it. Oh, that's so good.
A joke for people, for the consistent listeners.
Absolutely.
Yeah, if you don't understand, please go back and listen to the last two episodes that Ben was on.
And how is it?
Not bad, which I appreciate might sound not great, but I for some reason thought it was going to be awful. It's quite sweet. But yeah, it's like a little 6% perry, which is like a pear wine, I think.
Pear cider, I think perry is.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's only technically cider if it's apple. I think a perry is when you make
exactly,
cider.
Exactly, yeah. Cider is only apple. So it might be, I guess like a little pear cider then. It's quite nice, yeah.
There was me thinking that baby sham was actual, like, champagne, but made miniature somehow.
For a baby.
Well, yeah. You know, when you're in the valley.
It's only 6% as well, so...
only 6%. Yeah. Oh, for a wine, I suppose.
Yeah. Fine, well, for a wine. And even for
if you're drinking
cider,
it like
so.
A...
I should probably clarify that when I drink cider, on the rare occasions I do, they're sort of up around about 9%. So that's just too bad.
Does it come in one of those big terracotta jugs that you hold up with one side with your straw hat?
The very first time that I got actually proper drunk was at a friend's 18th birthday, and a couple of my friends. So I grew up in the West Country of England, and not that you can tell from my voice. And a couple of my friends had been driving from somewhere, as typically one does, and stopped at a random farm and picked up such a vat of cider, and so we had like this vat of cider that came out of a sort of terracotta pot, undercooked barbecue, and the night ended with a round of Trivial Pursuit, where if you got the question wrong, you had to drink I can't remember, it was tequila.
Oh,
you had to drink.
Oh, now, God.
Me and my friend were not well versed in drinking, sort of getting drunk and stuff. And so we had no concept of, oh, you only drink like a finger or two.
Mm.
So it was our understanding that every time you got it wrong, you drank whatever was in your glass.
Oh, dear.
So we consumed a lot of tequila.
Oh, no.
I don't remember getting home. I just remember the next day feeling awful and having to go to work.
And just going,
and stinking of alcohol.
That barbecue set me on.
And 80% of your trivia reserves had also been wiped out.
I knew nothing. I
you knew even less afterwards.
Well, also, it was Trivial Pursuit from like the 70s.
Oh, God.
Actually, that's what I grew up on was, oh, let's play Trivial Pursuit. And it's things like, what year did Clement Attlee leave office? Okay, what? I'm a 10-year-old. Why am I playing this?
9% cider as well. That must just come out like treacle.
There's a wonderful cider that I don't drink anymore called Old Rosie, and it just tastes like apple juice. And that's depends on
what. That sounds dangerous.
It's the devil.
I think if you get it in a bottle from the supermarket, if you find it, I think it's around about 7.5-8%. But I'm sure if you get it off from tap in a bar, it's close to 9%.
There was a brief moment where the bar opposite my old workplace was selling Old Rosie on tap, and we'd go there after work on a Friday, and I would be in there drinking Old Rosie, and I would come out completely steaming drunk, and it would still be daylight. That stuff is lethal. It is not a good place to be.
it is literally just like apple juice. You don't even and it's definitely one of those drinks that you'll quite happily like knock a few back, and then you'll just zip outside or something, and that's when the whole thing hits you.
Yeah.
You can go up and down to the bar, you can go off to the toilet and be absolutely fine.
It's the context change, I find. It's the same as I can generally get home okay, not feel anything. But if I'm too drunk, the second I'm through my front door, it's just suddenly my brain goes, hold on, this is normal land now. time to pay the bill. And I'm done. And I'm drinking an Old Speckled Hen, which is a nice beer.
Has anyone ever tried it?
It's a pale ale. From back before pale ales were all the thing.
Oh, is it a pale ale?
I thought it was.
I'm pretty sure it's a pale ale.
I always put it. I mean, in the same group as like Nuki Brown and stuff. I thought just because.
Oh, it is. Oh yeah, no, it is. It's lovely. Just you know, and yeah, it goes down in much the same way as the Boddington's will. But according to the can, it is it's a distinctive English pale ale.
Oh.
So it's distinctive in that it's nothing like a pale ale. At all.
It's distinctive. Is this brown?
Is that a Brains? Who's the brewery that does it? Because I know that there's certain
Moreland.
Some Brains pubs in Wales. For anyone that doesn't know, you're in the UK. I don't know whether this happens elsewhere, but you have a free house and I can't remember what the other one is. It's just like a brewery,
an expensive pub, house,
and a free house can serve any beer from any brewery, though typically it's more expensive. Whereas a brewery owned pub will only have beer from that brewery, and typically because there's obviously a deal there, the beer will be cheaper. And a lot of pubs in Wales are owned by Brains, which is like one of the big breweries in Wales, and lots of the Brains pubs will have Old Speckled Hen on tap, so hence me thinking that
So this is it's Moreland, and it is English. It's from Suffolk, apparently.
Nice.
But you saying that, it's interesting because we've got a Brooklyn brewery near us, as in Brooklyn Lager. And we haven't been in there yet, but I'm interested to just to see if, because as far as I know, Brooklyn only have one product, and that's Brooklyn Lager. But I'd be interested to just go in there and see if, you know, all 8 taps are just Brooklyn Lager, because I mean, I don't hate it, but I'm just intrigued to see if that's how they do it.
So much variety.
Yeah.
What else is there? Well, we got hats.
you can buy a hat. Lemonade in there. So in last week's episode, our puzzlers found themselves trapped in the streaming service Netflix and found themselves charged to help Jatham Statham reassemble the title to his most recent film so that they could find the exit, which you did with aplomb and a few seconds to spare.
Was it 14 seconds?
By the 14
skin
seconds
of our teeth. Now, I really enjoyed that. That was a really good puzzle.
It was fantastic.
Yeah. One thing I got very particular was the reenactment of the pooper pug. Sorry, one thing that we don't do often enough, weirdly, because this is an audio format, is do things that engage in the audio format, like role play. Like, it makes perfect sense.
It's always super difficult, I think. I think just because we live in such a visual world, although it's an audible world as well, it seems super difficult to come up with bits that are purely audio like that. We also, and this was very good on you, Dom, We have very much, in fact, I think that it was sort of like an unwritten rule for a long time. If you had other people in the puzzle that were not the puzzlers, they NPCs. Were generally non-interactive. So they might come in to say something or announce something and then they go away again. The reason that we did that partially was certainly in the very beginning, we weren't very good at doing stuff ad hoc. Maybe our interactions were quite predictable. We didn't go off piece too much, but you did very well to navigate us.
Yeah, I think it was nice having characters to interact with. Rather than just the set and the puzzles.
I think calling them characters implies even a certain level of depth. Names and voices, I think we can definitely... In fact, no, not all of them had names. voices, which changed mid-sentence.
Poofa Pug, I think, had great motivation, and their arc was incredible. It brought a tear to my eye.
Yes, see the please see the tier spin-off series. It's awesome.
Like a Bagsy the voice of Dad. Yeah, I like the logic puzzle with the suspects was really good as well. I'm normally really bad at those, but like having it there in front with the different visuals really helped as well. So we could sort of almost like draw lines between people. Usually I see those and my eyes just completely glaze over. And also,
yeah, I'm glad you took the lead on that one, Jamie, because I. Once you sort of lined everything up, and I was like, "Yeah, no, actually, that I'm happy with that." But I problem with them is sort of knowing where to start, and actually, it's not always knowing where to start. It's just actually just start.
So we just jab a finger somewhere and go right them.
Yeah, that's the only way that I know about how to solve them as well. And to be honest, I think I may have given you a disadvantage because I think for a couple of times you were thrown by my wording.
I think that's good.
For example,
though.
With I don't know. I think it should be about the logic more than trying to pass the dialogue. Which one was it? Oh, it's Raquel with neither Sean nor Tad had anything to do with it. And so you said, well, if she's lying, that means it can't be Sean or Tad. And I thought, bollocks. I was thinking about it. I was just like, I don't know how else I could have phrased that. Because I wanted it to seem at least vaguely resembling a sentence rather than just a list of facts.
Yeah.
I think that was good that it did throw us a little bit because it was one of them, just not the other, and that was the break in the logic. So yeah, I think that worked well. And yeah, Ben, you nailed that switch puzzle. My brain had just gone like magic roundabout theme tune started playing in my head, trying to figure that out. Any kind of spatial or two steps ahead, Buzzer, you MVP on that one.
I put in our little chat during our break. I drew a little matrix, A, B, C, D, E across the top and A, B, C, D, E across the side. And just across the row, does it turn on? It wasn't until literally the very end when we were actually saying it that I realised that it was C and D that we needed to... To switch.
That was good.
I was trying to see which ones married up nicely. It was blind to me even when I'd just written it out. Yeah.
I'm glad you did that because what I did was think when we flicked the first switch, Don, you said that the switch is A, C, and E. Went and I that spells the word ace. And then we flicked switch.
Fantastic.
And then we did switch B and it was like the letters B, A, and D. That spells the word bad. I'm on a fucking roll here, guys. And then it was B, C, E, before the common era. Here we go, guys. And then it all...
The story is being revealed.
It all fell apart after that. And that's when the magic roundabout theme tune started playing.
I'm glad as well. I think when we tested the theory, we did A, then B. And that was wrong and everything reset. And that was really nice because I think that we would have
kept flicking.
Delved deeper into, okay, so we've got A and then we've got B and these are up and these are down. And then, okay, so let's layer on E and we might have got there eventually, but we've taken a really convoluted path.
Well, so I did build in a fail safe for that because, that's not fun for anybody. So basically after you'd flicked two switches, if it wasn't in the right configuration, then it would have reset.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And then...
So the actual rule for it was that whichever one you flick, then the switch to the left of that
and the switch of but one to the right also flick, but then it loops around the edges.
Clever. That's good. I like that.
So there was a pattern, but I figured it's the same as the logic thing in that you can just smash your head into it and you probably get there in the same amount of time.
I didn't try that, dang it. I'm really glad we figured out the anagram with seconds to spare, because that's my biggest kryptonite in escape rooms is anagrams.
So I tried to just give a real range of puzzles so that there'd be at least something you hated. Right? whatever they're good at, whatever they like. You know, maybe they hate acting. Let's put some reading in there. Hey, maybe they suck at logic puzzles. That's got to be something in there, because you two are pretty good. And I was like, this is going to be over in 10 minutes. So, yeah, I mixed it up on purpose.
That's good.
With the anagram, did you choose the words or the combinations they're in to give us it almost? Because like we had pasta, we just had to knock the P off, right? And Asta is the middle of bastard. And then the unch in dunch is basically most of puncher.
Yes. Yeah, I did. I tried to make it so your brain would make that leap from dunch to punch and that sort of thing. But at the same time, I made it into recognizable words rather than just a jumble, because that I find makes it harder to think of anything other than those words.
No, exactly. And it was exactly that reasoning that made me really wonder whether it could be punch.
Yeah.
Because you'd just be taking the D off of dunch and putting the P on it. And I was like...
Seems too convenient.
It seems way too convenient. am I seeing unch and then, just trying to make words from that?
Mm.
So, yeah, it was very devilish, that.
Well, thank you. It was technically flexible. So you got bastard puncher, which was the correct answer, like the real one. I also would have accepted puncher bastard, bastard a punch, and punch bastarder. It's a sequel. Punch bastard 2, punch bastarder.
I mean, they're all valid titles. They all sound really good.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's a quadrilogy.
Yeah. I mean, bastard puncher sounds like Jason Statham, you know, fighting Nazis. Great. Punch bastard just sounds like a documentary about like old 1980s, 1990s puppetry with Punch and Judy shows.
But they're all Cockney.
They're always Cockney. So Poopa Pug is Peppa Pig. But the other ones that you, the other things you put into that Netflix selection, were they based on real things or were they complete fabrication?
No, they're all based on things I hate or see too much of. So I won't
eat Peppa Pig or have seen too much of Peppa Pig.
Both. I think I'm not the target market. I think I've tried to watch it multiple times and I just bounce off of it.
I hear if you know, get past season 2,
it really picks up after that.
Everybody says that, but I don't know. It just seems like nothing changes.
Once Pug grows the beard, then it really comes into its own.
Yeah, the one where they made Mummy jump a shark.
Watch next episode of The Infinite Escape Room where Ben as Mummy jumps a shark.
So what other ones did I have? Okay, so the documentary is just sending up those true crime documentaries, but particular ones where they have lots of recreations of what might have happened. I mean, I think the reason I see so many of those and therefore I'm sick of it is because Anna watches a lot of those, so my Netflix recommendations are always full of those. Yeah.
The rules are let down as well, right? Because so many of them, and it's not just like the crime ones, but also, what did the ancient Egyptians or the Romans or whoever, or the true story of Loch Ness or anything like that, they hook you in, right, with this sort of like, we're going to learn some new information here. That we're going to find an answer. And they go through all this stuff. Like, I would say maybe 60% of it is common to all such documentaries. And you've probably already learned that bit in school. You do pick up a few odd bits. And then they end with, well, I guess we'll never know.
Yeah, but it's one of those things that I was taught by one of my teachers when I was quite young. We were talking about a documentary that was going to be coming out, which was about whether or not they'd found the actual historical analogue of the Ark of the Covenant. And she said, she overheard us and she came over and she said, well, okay, firstly, I mean, the answer is no. Don't bother watching it because no, they definitely haven't. Firstly, if they had, we wouldn't be hearing about it in a documentary made a year after they did the dig or whatever it is. It would have been in the news. And secondly, if it's a question, then the answer is always no, because otherwise it wouldn't be a question. They would, if it's the same with the headline rule. If a headline's a question, then the answer is no.
Yeah.
So yeah, she was a wise lady.
That's good.
But it does rather spoil going into these documentaries because you think, I already know that they don't know. Otherwise, it wouldn't be a documentary in the news.
But in those cases, like the ancient Egypt ones, I occasionally like to watch just to hate watch it almost. I know that it's bullshit. I'm just there going, oh, what? This is absolutely stupid. Trust this guy. Doesn't nobody fucking talk about.
I just like how they make a supposition. And then a few seconds later, through a clever semantic trick, they make that supposition and assumption that they then build on. So it will be, you know, oh, this person claims that there are lots of unmapped tunnels underneath the pyramids that stretch for hundreds of miles in all directions. So what were those tunnels used for? Could it be for channeling electricity through this? Like, wait, hold on. We haven't even proved it. And then by the end, it's like, so why were they firing electricity at the moon? It's like, what are you? I just really respect that just level of piling up the bullshit. And which one did they talk about? Oh, the scary one. I can't remember the director's name, the writer-director, but he just chose them out. The haunted house on Haunted Hill and the terrifying time I spent in Tennessee. They're all just, it's about a family who has interpersonal relationships because they're a family, and there's jump scares and someone will probably float at one point, and everyone seems to love them, and
Mike Flanagan.
Mike Flanagan, there you are. If you're listening, Mike Flanagan, I am not a fan.
And that's why I did a puzzle for you.
We just lost Mike Flanagan as a listener.
But maybe we've gained Jason Statham.
I mean, I'd be happy with that trade-off, to be honest.
There can't be that many podcasts discussing him, surely.
And we lost
him. Yeah, we've lost him.
Live by the sword, die by the sword. I did enjoy the first Flanagan series, The House, The Haunting of Hill House. I liked that, not for the jump scares, but for the whole, like, the shit that's in the background that you don't notice on the first watch. Like, that's the stuff that I enjoy from a horror, is the corner of your eye, the creeping dread kind of stuff. But then I couldn't be asked when he just went, yeah, you know what, we'll take the same story and we'll just do it again with the same actors and call it, oh, it's a different house. These are different people. Like,
oh, is that the one that it was the same cast each time? And but it was like a different story for each season.
Yeah, you just changed.
Or was that American Horror Story? I think they did the same.
Oh, they did the same thing, did they?
That's what I mean. It's not a dry market when it comes to.
Yeah, yeah. Just zooming out a little bit and speaking a bit more generally, I found that when you look at some of the older movies from certainly the 80s and before, maybe verging into the 90s, actually they were really good. You can tell that things are puppets, but they're real, right? And they really interact with the actors on screen. And then we got CGI and it was shit. I have no idea why anyone thought it would be a good idea to use, for the most part. And it's getting a lot better, right? Today, things blend in a lot better and actors are more well-versed with working with it, and so it looks better. But I just don't understand why we tolerated that middle bit.
Because it was new and shiny. Rubbish.
But it looked amazing at the time. Like, I remember when I saw, like, when I was a kid and they first started integrating CG into cartoons, you look at it now and you go, oh, you've got that lovely hand-drawn animation and you've got that horrible flat thing moving without enough motion blur. But at the time, I was blown away. I was like, this is amazing. It's virtual reality. I think we're living in cyberspace.
I think where maybe I flitted between, oh, here's a new thing, and then went back to my VHS and watched the old thing. I was too frequently comparing what was coming out today, which, yeah, was really cool in itself. And then you'd go back like 5-10 years and go, oh yeah, but the puppets are actually better.
Well, the perfect case study for that is Farscape. I recently watched a retrospective documentary about Farscape because I guess, you know, there's always an audience for everything these days. It's kind of the perfect case study because for all of the characters and the sets everything is practical. It was Jim Henson Company did all of the puppets and all of the animatronic face bits for the characters and that sort of thing. And you can tell everything's a puppet, but it's speaking like a person, it's moving like a person, and it's actually there. So your brain tells you this is a character, this is a creature. All of the exterior shots of the spaceships, etc., is CGI, and it's reboot levels of CGI. It looks absolutely dog shit now. So I think that's the perfect museum piece for that time, and it just shows how good puppeteering still is, and just how much you don't need the CGI whatsoever. I mean, some of the best space scenes are in my opinion are Space Odyssey, and that's just like Star Wars but better lit. Old Star Wars, of course, good Star Wars. Oh, yeah. When they use models
before Lucas got the CG money and he's like, let's make everything a green screen.
Yeah, it turns out he wasn't a genius. He was just a make-doer.
Who got lucky one time.
Understood that. Yeah.
Yeah, those early days of CG, I wonder how much of it is like our brains at the time filling in the blanks, that suspension of disbelief. Because I remember watching like cutscenes in video games from like the PlayStation 1 going, wow, the graphics on these are amazing. Like, this is like so fluid. And you look at like, this is fucking trash. Like, they made of triangles. Like, yeah. But at the time, as a kid, I fully remember that being an actual, like a live-action scene.
So, growing up, we were always maybe a console behind, or certainly we got it months and months, maybe years after everyone else. And even sort of as an adult, I've never had, like, the most powerful PC. I'm not massively into PC gaming. And Alan, especially, will get a new game, and he'll hype it up before it's even come out, because obviously they do all the pre-stuff about it. And, oh, the physics are going to be amazing, and the graphics are going to be fun. You're gonna feel like you're there and stuff. And he hypes up so much. He gets the game, and it's fantastic, and he's playing it all the time. And it's like you're actually there. Like, it's like the screen doesn't exist. And I look at it from this, like, I'm expecting it to be, like, you know, so immersive. And it isn't.
It's very much what you bring in with you, I suppose. Isn't it?
I think
what
so,
you,
yes.
What you take away with you, one of the two. But yeah, no, I definitely agree. I mean, I've been able to go back to games like Medieval on the PS1.
Oh, nice.
I replayed not too long ago. And it was a weird cognitive split in that I simultaneously saw it as looking absolutely amazing because of nostalgia and the fact that it plays very well and is themed very well. You know, it's got a real good mood to it and consistent styling. And the other half of my brain telling me, this looks terrible. This looks like South Park. And it was kind of weird playing it. And I think in that sort of thing, and a lot of the older games as well, a lot of the PS1 and Dreamcast games, that sort of original 3D modeling, it was well used. Mm. They would use faked lighting in the textures, and they'd make things lots of very dark and moody a lot of the time. And you can get away with a lot when you do that. It was in the daylight scenes when it comes into stark relief, or lack thereof, I suppose.
Going back to the puzzle, did you have
a
fail state envisaged? So if we didn't finish it in time, what would happen to the algorithm and us?
He would have been very unhappy with you for losing him money, and he would have bodily picked you up and thrown you towards the Adam Sandler comedies category.
Yeah, with that one, that documentary, Stabbing in the Dark, my brain switched off for a good minute or so, because that's the name of a song by the band Ice Nine Kills, and it's about the Halloween franchise. So I was there going, oh, is that a reference? And I was there going, right, what? How can I tie this back to what I know about that music and that thing? Oh, shit, the puzzles, oh, shit, that stuff's happening. Ben, take over.
It was just a super clever pun. Because it's about murders, and they're also taking just wild rides of supposition on what they think happened. So they're stabbing in the dark.
That makes more sense to what I thought. So that's good.
I mean, I do try. I try and keep my references a little less niche than that, and secondly, I also try and keep them broad enough that if people don't even realize it's a reference, they can still follow the logic of what's going on. Particularly after I was remembering last time Ben told us he neither reads books nor watches films. And I was like, well, there's no way in hell he's heard of Netflix then.
Jason who?
What was so on that? what would Mr. Strathairn have been in that I might have seen?
Oh, the Calvin Klein winter collection in the sort of mid-90s. He was an underwear model for a while.
Don't do fashion either.
Yeah, he was in a, in a music video. He was in a music video dancing in Speedo.
Yeah, I don't really do music either.
I think, wasn't he a diver or something originally?
So I've got him on Wikipedia, and he doesn't look like an actor.
No, he doesn't.
He is, though. I'm pretty sure he is. Have you seen or heard of Snatch? I think that's the first thing I saw him in.
I think I've heard of it.
Or Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels?
It's something I've heard of, yes.
Fast and the Furious is in those
one
now.
To be machine, which is called the Italian
show. Any film that needs a bald Cockney gangster, guaranteed Jason Statham's in it.
Is he actually Cockney?
He's probably nice.
I mean, I know his accent is.
He's from Derbyshire.
So not really.
He's just putting it on the fake fuckers.
He must have grown up in London to have that accent, surely.
So I've gone through his filmography on Wikipedia, and the only thing that I've seen that he was in was Romeo and Juliet.
That's a classic.
Well, I can highly recommend Crank.
Crank is great.
And Crank 2. They're both absolutely fantastic movies. Was it Chad Stahelski who since has become a real film director?
Oh, wow. Crank and Crank 2, exactly the same film as well, as far as I remember.
And they're ones that happen where, like, the follow on immediately. He doesn't seem to have aged much in 3 years, but he also doesn't seem to have aged much since 2006, looking at this picture.
I think that's the benefit of being, like, constantly bald, is that you can't see anything graying, so it's easier to hide it. Bald people in the audience, tell us, do you age?
Crank, I would recommend. The rest of it, it's your life. The big sign saying, "Are you still watching?" Has lit up. So I think it will soon be time to leave. But first, let's go around the table and recommend something we've been enjoying.
There's a series that I've been watching. I started watching recently on Netflix, ironically, called Bodies, which is so far very interesting. So the basic premise is that it's set across four different time periods. So it's like the 1880s, 1940s, 2020s, and 2060s. And it's about a detective, and a body turns up at the exact same location in all four timelines. And it's the same body. With the same injuries, it's got like the same markings and stuff, and it's what happens there. I'm only one episode in. There's some weird like cult shit going on between these timelines. It jumps around quite a lot. It's really interesting. Check it out.
It's based on a comic book, I think.
Oh, what? Oh, sweet. In that case, I'm definitely going to check out the comic book.
I think that must be quite difficult to explain when it's time in the past with like a mobile phone. does the body get dressed in
it's nude.
Appropriate?
It's completely naked in every appearance. Yes, yes.
They thought
which adds to the mystery because what was he doing beforehand?
Yeah. There is an element that does mean that it can't go backwards past a certain point, but I won't say exactly what that is because I imagine that might be a big plot point.
Dissect him and find a Twinkie.
What is this strange, mysterious food? Aliens, maybe?
So, I'm going to recommend Stainless Steel.
I assume that's a new concept album by a band we haven't heard of.
As a cooking implement.
Okay.
So, I'm sure like many of you, I have used nonstick cookware for years, and I've hated it because it is definitely not nonstick. And it flakes off, gets in your food and gives you cancer and stuff like that. So I've taken to using stainless steel cookware, and it's really good. I'm enjoying it. I replaced some baking trays the other week, seasoned them up. They went from like really super shiny silver to like a bronzy gold colour, which is is quite cool. And nothing sticks to them now. I've seasoned them, so I'm going to recommend stainless steel cookware.
How am I? Okay. How am I going to link to stainless steel in the show notes, Ben?
Right, I've got to think of something that's even broader and harder to link to. Swimming. Swimming.
I feel that I've brought this section down. Like, it's all very intellectual. Like, I've seen this really cool film.
I think you've got some practical shit, though, Ben. That's the thing. Like, you've just given people
I'm going to recommend the physical activity of swimming.
Is that new for you?
Since I've been able to do it for a very long time, but haven't done by choice. We've started going swimming every Monday last couple months. Every Monday after work, we go and swim for about an hour. In terms of exercise, it's good because it's low impact, so we don't bust our knees like when we're running. It's a good workout because just to, stay in one place, you're constantly moving your body. It's nice and chilled. We go at a time when there's no lifeguard, so, you don't have a timed thing. And also no lifeguard means no children allowed, so there's not much splashing.
I thought you were going to say, and of course no lifeguard means there's a chance you could die.
Yeah, well, you play in God
mode. That adds an edge to it, right? Yeah. No, you have to sign a waiver. Seriously, you have to sign a waiver to go swimming without a lifeguard. But yeah, Jamie, link to swimming.
I will find my best 1950s instructional video of swimming. Would you try that wild swim in that sea all over the bloody Instagram where people just fling themselves into bodies of water that are way too cold for humans to be in?
I've jumped into a lot. I've done cliff jumping. Oof. A lot in my life. For someone who's not at all active, I've done a surprising amount of that. So I have jumped into the ocean from sort of two houses height.
Wow.
As long as you know what's at the bottom, as long as you know it's there and you're not going to, paralyze yourself.
Yeah.
That's a lot of fun.
But then there's sharks.
But
Toon.
Sea swimming in general, I mean, I did nearly drown. We were in the north of Spain and they had a platform out there, like on a pontoon that had a slide on it. So I said, oh, let's swim out to that. And Anna was like, no, it's a long way. I don't know if I'm comfortable swimming that far. And I was like, it can't be that far because, why would they have it if you couldn't swim to it? So in the end, I put her on like an inflatable or something and I dragged her, which meant that I was swimming, taking twice as long and twice as much effort. And it turned out we looked it up on Google Maps afterwards and it was just over half a mile against the tide, pulling another human being on an inflatable. And so it turns out you're supposed to get to this pontoon by boat.
Ah.
And I just swam to it. And when I got there, I was so nearly dead that I basically had to lie there for about 40 minutes to be able to support myself on my arms.
Oh, God.
Then I went on the slide anyway because I'm out there now. And as soon as I plopped into the water, I was just like, this was not a good idea. Yeah, I do not have the strength to swim anymore. Eventually, we did make it back in, but that was taking turns on the inflatable.
You, one thing that surprised me, we went to Cuba on our honeymoon, and it's I think the only time that I've been, or certainly in recent years, the only time I've been in the sea to sort of swim. And aside from the fact that you have to sort of you've got the current that sort of generally drags you sort of whichever way you don't want to go, I found.
yes.
I think because there's just so much salt there, it did feel easier to stay buoyant. Which
the saltier the sea is, the more you... they've got the Dead Sea, where you can just sit down in it.
Yeah.
That sounds nice. But then, I've got a bath upstairs. It's much closer.
And a vat of Saxo. Again, for international audiences, that's the type of salt that we have in the UK.
See, the whole Jesus walking on water thing wasn't a miracle. It was just a very salty body of water that he was on at that point.
Just a publicity stunt.
Yeah. Hey, Simon, look at this.
He was the David Blaine of his time.
Shazam.
Cool. I think that's a good place to just stop. That's all for this week, folks. We will weave off home and we will Well, we won't see you. You will hear us in the future. Toodaloo.
Bye-bye.
Tatty bye.
I want to get some chicken wings.
I just want something cooked in
a stainless steel pan.
Stainless steel, yeah. With lots of salt.
Something incredibly seasoned, but via the pan. Salt the pan first and then stick the chicken in. That's what I want.